I noticed that the sheet that you have is the summary that I knocked out on my work specifically. I'm just filling in on a little bit more of background, that this was a synodical project as it originated. That in November of 65, after two or three unsuccessful attempts, I accepted the call to go to Dallas to develop new forms of worship, new forms of church, new forms of ministry, particularly in the Oak Lawn area, which is in the sort of northwest quadrant of Dallas, and which was supposed to be the locale of a heavy thrust of apartment development, especially populated by the young adults. Young adults who define very nebulously anywhere from 18 to 35, and if you want to bend a little on either end, that's okay. It's not so much a chronological age as it is more of an attitude. And this was the function of it for the first year. That Synod funded it, and I was administered, the project was administered then out of the mission board under Papa Rask from Austin. After Synod went on its economy binge in the latter part of 66, special ministries got hacked, and special ministries were to revert then for their support and for their continuation to the districts in which they were working. So the Texas district was gracious enough to pick me up. I got the word while I was dove hunting, by the way, with one of my older boys, and on the property as one of the members of the board of directors of the Texas district, and I was informed of all that had transpired. I didn't get a rumble on this, you know, that's sort of another world there, until he yelled across the stock tank to me, "Hey, hold it, see, here's your fire." And I felt reassured that I had a shotgun at least, but this is the way it went. And now the Texas District has extended a two-year contract, which was supposed to be dated February of 68, but which I didn't receive until June of 68, and did not sign until last week because we had some differences as far as the direction was concerned. And I think these are pretty well squared away. I've jotted some key words down on what I'd like to do if this is acceptable to you, and I think you can go with it. I'd like to give sort of an overview of some of these key words and elaborate on them a little bit. And from there, then you can pick up on your questions. And I'll try to do this as rapidly as I can so that I don't spend too much time on this. The first key word is that of acceptance, and here is where one of the basic difficulties comes in because of our traditional Lutheran view of ministry and use of the means of grace. We've sort of been conditioned to the idea that somewhere along the line you've got to have proper proportions of law and gospel and just about every ministerial activity. That first of all you give them hell and then you give them heaven. First of all, you beat them until they know they're sinners, and then you give them the grace of God in Christ, which they ought to appreciate because they're bloody. The idea of this ministry is on a little different premise. One, because of the fact that we're in the Bible Belt, and that the great majority of the young adults that we deal with have had experience with the Christian Church in one form or another. They are not rank heathen. This is not a mission field in the sense of bringing the gospel to people for the first time. Most of these people have had not only an acquaintance, but almost their fill of Christianity in the form of their church background. They've been to Sunday school, they've had the home training, and this is a part of their makeup. There is, I think, therefore, the necessity to establish a frame of reference here for any kind of ministry in a special region like this. And from the outset, I had a very strong feeling, and have continued to have this feeling emphasized, that a ministry among these people ought to be demonstration of the gospel. That it ought to be something that brings the meaning and message of the Christ to the lives of these people where they're at. And that this necessitates, first of all, the openness of the gospel. But this means that we learn as Christians and as a church to try to be as open in our thinking, in our actions, in our ministry, in our church forms, as the gospel is open. And here, of course, the emphasis has to be on the idea that the gospel is open, wide open. God so loved Pankasman, the world. God was in Christ, reconciling the world unto himself. And that it's this kind of an idea of being all-inclusive in the reach of the gospel. That these people fit into this all-inclusive gospel, and that we come to them on the basis of meeting them where they are, rather than where we'd like them to be, or think they ought to be, or wish they were. Rather than approaching them with our set of standards, rather than establishing for them a frame of reference that they're going to have to relate to, and to come at them in the openness and acceptance of the gospel and say, look, I really don't care where you are. What I'm interested in is plugging into where you are. And it's this kind of a thing that we would try to affirm rather than condemn. And it's my strong conviction that many of these young people have been beaten over the head with the cross of Christ to the point where it has really become an offense. But I think we've reached the time when we try to cram the gospel down people's throats long enough to the point where we ought to recognize that this is not our work, you know, in spite of our good intentions, that the kingdom is still God's, and the work is still God's, and he's going to work when and where he will. Not that we can snap our fingers with our evangelism campaigns, however well promoted they may be, and however much we spend on materials, but that rather this is, you know, the act of God. And it's God's affirmation now to the world that he's redeemed, and to these people. It's God's yes that we're trying to spell out, and that we're trying to say in relationships to these young adults in the apartments. This means, of course, that you're going to have to take the risks that are built into our urban society, which has a lot of fringe cultures in the urban setting that somehow or another we're going to have to deal with or learn to relate to or learn how. The idea of recognizing that there are some pretty strong forces at work in the late hippie movement, in the drug culture, in the homophile community, among the divorced and the separated and the widowed, that these subcultures are a part of urban society and do have an effect of one kind or another on even the straightest people. Mary Smith and John Doe, living in the apartments, are affected by the hippie movement, even though they themselves are not yet, and stand aghast as a great unwashed and unshaven crowd. They are affected by it, and I think the sooner we recognize where, become acquainted with vocabulary, and learn to be accepting of the fringe culture in its crassest form, the better we're going to be able to deal with these elements as they crop up in the bulk of young adult society. The second key word is flexibility or association. And here it's a matter of trying to set the premise that the gospel is best conveyed when it's wrapped up in a person, that the idea of relating to people is an essential in order to clear the way for proclamation. Again, I think a lot of the negative imagery of the young adults in the apartments has come out of the fact that people have been proclaimed to death. Marshall McLuhan, if you've done any of your reading with the hot and cold media, very clear and very important, I think to recognize that this is an actual fact, that people are deluged, you know, with this sea of words, this barrage of verbiage that's pounded at them, and to which the church is contributing its own noise. Now, it may be the noise of God's words, and yet, because of the din, you know, that still small voice of the gospel is pretty hard to hear because of all of the other forms of communication that dull the senses to death. Okay, so it's this idea then that we're acting on, that having the impersonal mass media approach, having the impersonal approach of proclamation alone, is more of a detriment than a help. And therefore that we would want to establish links of association, that we want to get to the point of having relationships that are meaningful out of the plethora of contact. And this is one of the strange phenomena of apartment life. You may have the image, as I think a lot of people have, you know, this is really living. And I won't deny it, there it is. it's great. It's a great way to live. And more and more people are choosing it, not out of necessity, but are choosing it deliberately.
You live there?
No. Maybe that's why I have this real strong urge to say that's real living. We do not live in, because two of the guys in the team ministry study that we worked out of did this as a deliberate experiment. And it's one of the strange things that this boomerangs. For 6 weeks after you move in, you're great. We got a preacher among us, and you can knock on his door day or night. We got somebody to talk to. Boy, it's beautiful having a guy like this around. 6 weeks, and the calls stop coming. And you very soon get the message, I am too close. I'm getting to be a threat. I know too much. This is not comfortable. This is not healthy, you know. It's like living in the suburbs with a preacher's backyard next to yours. And you don't have a 4th of July to have. Okay? This idea, then, of relating meaningfully is something that applies to a basic need to the young adults, of the young adults in the apartments, because in the sea of humanity, and some of the apartments are growing in size to the point where we've got one complex that's going up now of 8,000 units. You can imagine, you know, this whole thing, self-contained with its stores, a complete village unto itself, and beautifully done, a great place to live. Having this kind of a surrounding, and you're recognizing that being anonymous and being selective in your association, in the urban community, is a necessity for survival, and legitimatizing this and saying, that's all right, folks, you know, I think rather silly, a Christian ideal that we've got to be friends with everyone, that sort of grew up with our rural past, is not applicable to urban culture. You are risking far too much to try to live in the city that way. So you've got a plethora of contacts, you know, people all around you. And yet, I'm lonely. This is a message that comes out. And after you hear it long enough, you become impressed by it, that there's a real need, and a pretty general need, to get meaningful relationships out of this whole maze of contacts and opportunities. All right, and it's in this idea of attempting to establish association with the idea of coming to the point of meaningful proclamation. Association, relationships, as a prior act, or as an act comparable in importance to that of proclamation. I don't want to sound too negative here, but I sound to you like one who's saying that the day of the spoken gospel is dead. Tangled with Prof. Retcher from Valpo at the seminar a couple of years ago, and came out much the worse for wear, because that's like casting Christians for lions when you tangle with him completely unprepared, pushed forward as a volunteer for the faith, you know.
You were the Christian.
I was a Christian. I came out handily. This idea of proclamation, I am not denying the efficacy of the word. I believe in saying Christ, yeah. But I don't believe that the gospel is magic words. And I don't believe in a gospel that's said just by making some consonant and vowel sounds, you know? So I'm not gung-ho to the exclusion of proclamation on this idea of relationships. What I'm saying is that relationships, in my perspective, are just as important as proclamation, that you can't do without one or the other. All right, in this kind of idea of association, too, I think we're going to have an overall view of God's Word in the sense that we're going to have to get off the stick, I think, of this pressure kind of evangelism. I do believe, you know, that it's not the time or day for the church to sit on its rear and twiddle its thumbs. But I don't believe either that it's a time for the church to be hyperactive. Go burning up its nervous energy, you know, by doing a lot of different things and a lot of different ways and just being active. I think it's a time for the church to recognize that God is still at work. Man, if we can't hang on to that, we're really in trouble. God is still at work, and that he's going to work in his own way and in his own time. So that this ministry is built on the premise of letting things happen rather than making things happen. It's the idea of cultivating an association on the basis of personal relationships. That I don't push you, I don't try to force God, but that somewhere along the line I have the trust that when God wants, as God wills, where God creates the opportunity, I'm going to be able to get my kicks in a meaningful way. And until that time, I'm going to have to live with the frustration of not moving on, of keeping my mouth shut until I can feel that this is a very natural thing, that our association is to the point, and that there are openings that make it valid for me now to do the sharing that's in the gospel in its verbalized way or in a demonstrated way. But the emphasis, let things happen rather than make things happen. Flexibility is an absolute necessity in the urban setting because of the fact that the whole thing is in a constant state of flux and movement. The whole business is changing, and unless the church is ready to fit into the times, with the fluctuations and mobility of the times, we can sit on our nicely landscaped lots and let the world go by. And I believe God wants us to be in the world. And here I am not again condemning parishes. I'm not an iconoclast that wants to burn, baby, but try to say to the parishes, look, you've got your job to do, but find out how to get with it and do it. And really come alive for the commission that God has given you and for the service that you can render as a congregation. For the ministry that God allows you to do in your form and structure. And please then also recognize that there may well be other ways of doing the gospel ministry. Of having the function of the church fulfilled in forms other than the usual and normal congregational form. This idea of mobility in the apartments in Dallas is especially emphasized just because of the lifestyle of the people there. Apartments in Dallas and most of the Southwest are different from what we find in the Middle West or out East, in the sense that we have the great majority of them being garden-type apartments. One or two-story structures, usually built around a courtyard, patio or swimming pool or something like this, rather rambling, open to the sky and to the good Texas soil, you know, and all this jazz, where they try to bring the rural into the urban, and have a lot more openness than your high-rise structures like Marina Towers, the Lord Hugh Morse School at the amateur, one of the big ministry. there a couple years back. And this then creates a different kind of lifestyle, and this creates again the necessity to recognize what happens in these departments, where mobility is the key word here, of people being constantly on the move. Some of the houses, and they're not that bad. They're pretty decent departments, well run, well kept up. But they have such a high degree of mobility that to keep a tenant list stable for 3 months is a minor miracle. Apartments are building very rapidly, concentrating on the young adult style and the young adult market. And it's the in thing, you know, to try to live in the newest apartment, the problem. So you have a lot of apartments out. You live here for 3 months, and it's doing lots of construction lots of ways. My God, no matter how nice this is, the studio lots could possibly be where you live. So it's this plus the idea that you really don't have to have it even for moving. You know, moving is no stigma. If you want to, why not? As well as this complication that there are people who are trying to get lost, who are trying to lose themselves, who are trying to set themselves apart from, let's say, previous associations, either in other apartments or the strings that are still hanging on from home, former community, church, and what have you. And by bouncing around, you can even evade your creditors. And this is really difficult for, I think, some of our pastors to understand. You send me referrals and say, look this fellow up and encourage him to go to church. I check them out faithfully, and usually they're 3 months behind the times. I make the call as soon as I can, and I found the guy's already left. And maybe two or three moves behind him trying to face him down, which becomes a real problem. And it's really difficult to convey this to some of our pastors, but this is one thing. Okay, flexibility also applies to the idea that church is people, and the church ought to be where people are, and that the apartment ministry in Dallas is geared to the thrust of trying to be where people are in the urban community.
This means where they work, this means where they have fun, this means where they, in quotes, live. And just because a person has an apartment address does not mean, in fact it seems to be getting more and more so, that it would be inclined not to mean that they live there. They may hang their clothes there and sack out and there's nothing else to live, but in the meantime they live in a lot of other places besides their apartment. So it's quite valid, we feel, to plug in and to have ministry where people are. At work, we've got several things going in some of the major office complexes, among some of the occupational buildings, the stewardesses, and I've got all kinds of volunteers from laymen to do that kind of work. In the hospital settings, you know. Anyway, in these select areas. Also, as far as recreation is concerned, that we can legitimize that in fun, you know, the church really is against this, as opposed to the great Baptist method that every preacher is committed to pound the pulpit and yell at his laryngitis about smoking and boozing and bed bouncing and dancing and what have you. But this is really not where it's at as far as the relationship of people is concerned, the message for people is concerned. So having a flexibility to be able to move with the people and the needs of the people is a pretty heavily underlined word in this, and I think it's comparable in the ministry. And then form. Now here I'll get down to where we are at interaction. Which is a small group nation which I think has a little paragraph or so to try to give the overall description of what's happening. We are just really coming up from underground. This has developed in the last 6 months. Prior to this, most of the activity was underground. to where we're doing the work without coming to the surface and waving the PR flag or even attempting to relate much of what we were doing back into the church. We're at that point now. Interaction is a form that we're using based on a small group base, and the small group methodology is the one that seems to be the most viable tool for the church to use at this point and to meet some of the needs that are apparent in the young adult culture. I don't mean this in the sense of a psychotherapy now. We've been getting training in the field of psychotherapy, particularly in the small group type of work. But I don't think this is where the church ought to get hooked. I think we made our mistake in committing ourselves in forms of pastoral counseling to the point where, you know, the rigid and method is a hidden thing, and now anybody who knows anything about it comes and knows just that how stupid it all was. Carl Rogers himself is going on to another thing and kind of hoping not too many people have reference to his previous work. But to use a tool, you know, from outside the church is, I think, most valid for the church to do. And to pick up with this small group methodology and set it in the perspective of the Christian ministry and of the Christian community is most valid and, I think, very helpful also. There's problems in relationships going back to this point here of association in the young adult culture especially. The mass form of relationship obviously isn't satisfying. They're in masses all the time, you know, to go to a congregation and be a part of another mass, a mass of people, not mass of worship, just doesn't happen. The opposite of that, the one-to-one thing, really isn't too helpful either, because more often than not, it's a threatening thing to the person being confronted in a one-to-one relationship. And therefore, the small group is something that seems to be very valid in the thing that we're using here. Interaction center is just a kind of glorified board wall. It's an office with five rooms that is deliberately rented with the limitations in mind that we wanted to force us into the molds that we saw as being the ones we wanted to use. So that between a physical aid center that rents all kinds of hospital equipment and the Planned Parenthood clinic. You make it look whatever you want. Chuck Rogers, by the way, Charles Rogers, who lives here with the family, like the family magnification, yeah, I've been here for years. He's now head of the Planned Parenthood clinic back in Sterling. This small group thing then is something that we develop on the basis of being able to be used in a flexible and mobile form, so that interaction as a building is simply one of the options. That we don't want to get hung just to the place, you know, and make that the church again. But we want this to be as unchurchly as possible, if you will, and still be church, to reach a point where we're not saying, folks, this is it, you know, this is really where it's at, to the exclusion of being elsewhere, but simply as an option, so that we'll say, okay, how about the small group meeting where you're working, or with your grouping, wherever that's at, maybe your partner, in the private club that you belong to, you know, wherever, or if you want, how about coming to 36, maybe, if you want, you know? So it's not the thing that we're hung with, and it's not the thing we have to use. But I say, if you like, fine, if not, okay, too. And the idea then of picking up small groups at any point, for any instance, not defining, you know, why people have to get together before we're in a relationship. If you six guys who are interested in drinking, good. They got a common cause. And I think we ought to find a way to work with it.
From that ridiculous all the way to the sublime, I'll leave your imagination. In the development of this now, I formed a structure, and this is a little bit of a derivation from Roy Bloomhorst thing. You know, Roy Bloomhorst, if you read Faithful Rebel, had the idea of this being the picture of his community and of his work, where you had these three wells, the concentric circles, and out here you have people just picking up on any kind of interest along the way. You had your study groups, and in here you had your contemporary Christians, was the committed group. Now, he only had a group of about six after 2 years who were in this little inner circle of the really committed group. But a takeoff from this now is the one we're working with, where we have three levels. And this would be a sort of old activity level. Or maybe an even better word would be participation. And any kind of participation in anything, whether it's vacuuming the rugs, or helping with the typing, or being in some group, if this is the level you want to plug in to say, you know, I participate, great, you can. The second is the study level, where we encourage people to grow, and where we have as a part of the study things, the area of religion, and specifically the area of Christianity, and more specifically the area of the Lutheran Christianity. Then the committee, where we have the people who are ready to accept some form of discipline, some form of dedication to the idea of worship, and really working with this concept of worship, make it meaningful, participation in the sacrament, and making use of what you are under the umbrella of Christian concern. Not necessarily evangelism in its commonly understood sense, but maybe a real thrust to be whatever kind of person you are under God, find ways to have this live for somebody else. And this then is blocked in, and here's where we get trouble. On a 3-month plan, that there is a term membership built into this that they're trying to work on. It's a quarterly thing where people have the deliberate choice of picking up whatever level they're interested in being in. If they want to be in on the activity, you know, general stuff, not too committed, not too structured, that's fine. 3 months, good. Study, fine. The discipline life, fine. But it's all for 3 months. After a 3-month period, then comes the time for decision and evaluation. Would you like to go from this level to this level? From this level to this level? Or would you want to go from this level to this level, or this level to this level? Or would you want to opt out? That's a possibility that has to be rendered too. And our problem, obviously, I'm sure you see it, is trying to relate this as being not only viable for the apartment community and for the young adults. I think you can see the reasoning behind something like this for this group, with the mobility that's there, with the continual reluctance on the part of young adults to make long-range, open-ended commitments, with the avoidance of, you know, this general mishmash of things that is a part of church membership, you know, with a broad spectrum of duties that may or may not mean anything. Here we're saying, plug in, but know what you're doing, and make a commitment for it. With the idea of a short term, 3 months, and then you have the option to do it whatever you want. Continue, up it, decrease it, or out. All right, this is where we're at, and I guess we're going to put a big fat period and call this it as far as the general overview is concerned, and see where we go from here on the basis of your question or comment.
You had mentioned that there's a lot of apartment hopping. That's rather unusual. I live in an apartment and we have a time of lease for a year.
6 month lease is general, but it doesn't mean that much. Because for one, Texas laws are such that it makes it very difficult to make people pay if they break the lease. You cannot guarantee wages, for example, in Texas. And because of this, there aren't too many teeth or too much pressure to make people do this, except that now it's switching a little bit from a buyer's market to a seller's market. And most of the apartments that are worth their salt have high occupancy rates, running 95% and above. Some of them even have waiting lists for a year or longer, so that they can afford to put some stipulations on this paper and say, lay down $100 as your guarantee of fulfilling the lease. But again, you know, what's $100? Do you really want to go?
Are most of these apartments
furnished? Yes. You do get options furnished or unfurnished in some. But again, why load yourself down with a lot of baggage? It's a lot easier to pack your toothbrush and move than it is the rest of it.
Well, I take it this is not what you consider low-cost housing.
It is where it goes to the point of communal living. Apartments will run in the single young adult, one and two bedroom choice, from about $100 and a quarter sky's the limit, $400, $500 a month. But the average apartment for real nice apartment now, fairly new, well managed, well kept up, well furnished, pool, you know, stuff like this, club, private club or bar, and bar visitors, would run, let's say, $150. Okay, that's pretty healthy smack for one person to lay out. But you get yourself a couple of roommates, and it isn't too bad to keep them $50 a month, you know, for this kind of living. So you do have doubling up, tripling up, quadrupling up in some of them, with the attendant problems, by the way, that this would create, not only in relationships, but also in some of the things that come off.
My brother's up in Chicago this year, and they had a deep single living with another teacher up there, and they had a tremendously hard time finding an apartment. Is this a problem in Dallas also, where there's a tendency not to rent to two single fellows?
No. As long as they appear to be healthy and job connected, that they have the money, and you know, are not the type that's going to smoke pot on the stairs or throw their beer cans in the hall. Okay. And what?
That leads in the question I was going to ask. What do you do with the whole racial thing down there? And secondly, kind of a standard question for us. What, you got a typical day or typical days or something, you know, that you could take it through?
All right. On the first thing, segregation is very much a reality in Dallas apartments. And it is this way primarily because of the vested business interests who are afraid, scared, sick of what might happen to their nice middle-class white apartments if they start allowing black people into them. They're very afraid that this is going to be the bombshell that runs them right out of business because their tenants are not going to put up with it. It's not so much just the reluctance on the part of the owners and managers to relieve discrimination as it is this economic fear of what's going to happen to the rest of the tenants if we leave Negroes into our apartments. There are Negro apartments, most of them, by the way, sad second class as compared to the white young adult apartments, at comparable prices, however, because there are some fine job opportunities for Negro, black, and adults who can afford to live this way, and the market is there for them. This really pains me, and I've been so tempted to find ways of dropping bombshells and doing something about it. And yet, I think it would be a very bad thing for me to do. It's one of the necessities in this type of work is to keep some sort of working relationship with apartment owners and managers. A key to getting into some of these places is right at that level. And if you don't have at least the tacit approval of ownership and management to work in the apartments, you got problems all the way along the line. And I can also see that this is not a simple problem with a simple answer. Go haul in a couple of hundred blacks from South Dallas and make signs and pick it. We could bust a couple of houses wide open, I'm sure we could. But it would really create a mess, and I'm convinced there's got to be another way around if we have the time.
You don't know what that is.
I don't. And again, I've had my hands full trying to do what I considered my job without it going off in six different directions at once. And this is my bag now to serve the people that are there in the single young adult community. And this is why I've got to work with them. I'll let Mark Thurman stir me up in a different direction at the time. Maybe convince me that I'll do something more. Now, I'm open to this, and I do work a good deal with Mark, because it's something that rankles me. And, well, Dallas bugs me. It's a place that is so tight in its power structure and its smothering Baptist ethic that I get kind of sick about the whole thing. With its nice appearance, and its dirtier optics underneath, everybody keeps the lid on and they breathe in there. Segregation doing a part.
That's just his book. On Kennedy's assassination, he forgot after Dallas.
Yeah.
Do you have anything near like a typical day or a typical night?
Yeah, okay, that was the second part of it. And I guess I can simply answer it. Right now, I've got several group structures that I'm committed to plug in time slots. But the rest of it is completely unstructured and free-flowing, motivated somewhat by the spirit, somewhat by my own frenetic push to activity, and somewhat by my own lethargy. Maybe here a little illustration this past summer. I was concentrating on the Huey properties. This is it's a Huey's got 17 houses in their apartment structure. And I had plugged in real good the manager in three of his houses and wanted to see if I could go to the level of ownership now and plug in, find ways to plug in the rest of them because they're real fine apartments to work in. And the kind of people that I feel real good in working with. So I've got four boys, and this was my smart aleck number three son, who saw me leaving the house heading for the car with the gospel according to Tina, a super suntan oil, a six pack, and my swimming suit. And he said, "Hey, look, Dad's got to go to work on a nice day like this." this is the way, you know, I feel most of it has to be done. That you're where you have to be on any given day to sort of start plugging in.
Well, how do you then make your contacts? How do you get these groups started? How do you start your study groups and everything like this?
Yeah. We have not PR'd it, and I've got a built-in reluctance to do too much PR, general PR, you know, for promotion, either through the mass media or through the apartment organs. Most of it is built on the basis of initial contacts and linkage. Initial contacts being anywhere, on airplane flight under the stewardess, who's alive and interested and interesting and good, you know. From her, she's got three friends, you know, and she knows this guy that she's been going with, and he knows two other guys. He can go on and on and on for a good long ways.
You introduce yourself as a minister?
No. I'm Bob Hogan.
Yeah. You say I got this thing going, you
want to
join?
No. Good line, man. Thanks, Flappard. It's a matter of me not coming across as being the right Reverend Bob. Or R.A. Hovis, or representative of the Lutheran Church in Missouri City, but me being Bob Hovis, human being, Christian. And incidentally, we'll get to it, but incidentally, I happen to be a Lutheran minister. I think I feel very comfortable with this, and far more comfortable than I did when I wore the clerical, which I did too for a while and felt quite comfortable with it in certain circumstances. But you don't feel too comfortable wearing a clerical in a gay bar because you think you are there for a purpose other than what you want to be there for. There is no such thing as a clerical swimsuit. And for a number of reasons now, I've gotten to the point where I felt that this created more problems than the whole thing is worth. I like the idea of the ID, you know, being identifiable. I like that. And yet, because of all the negative images that are there in this culture, against the church, against the ministry, that I find it far better to relate as a person. I think it's necessary to have some image breaking done here. So for that reason, I guess I can say I do try to break the image of the usual pulpit pounding, Bible packing creature of the Bible book. And try to establish a human relationship, and we'll take it from there. Other ways, for example, we do group work in general groups. If we want to open up an apartment that looks interesting, and here, by the way, you know, every apartment is different. Every apartment has its own house character and sort of its own grouping of people within it. And this is moving all the time, though, too. When I first came to Dallas 3.5 years ago, Gaston Avenue, that was it. You call up an apartment locator service and say, hey, I'm 22 years old, pre-white, unmarried, and got a good job, and I like to swing. That's all you had to say. They knew where you wanted to go. Gaston Avenue, that was the place. This is now moved. Gaston Avenue is now the lower grade of apartments. and there's an economic story behind this, as well as, I think, a sociological story, and Cedar Springs is now it. But if you find a place to that you want to break into, to open up, we've used various methods here, all the way from getting a main speaker, who's known to the people and who touches on an area of interest. Dr. Ed Ridman, for example, who was head of Planned Parenthood before Chuck Radcliffe, is well known in the Dallas area. He's a fine man. Okay, have Ed speak, on the ethics of birth control, poorhouse. Have a panel, some sort or another on something or another. Have a party. This is very definitely a part of the apartment scene in many of the apartments. In fact, some of the major houses now have full-time positions for social directors who do nothing else, and like your cruise director. You see to it that people are happy, and this means having enough parties and enough activities in the house to keep them there, keep the tenants happy. Part of this is, if you keep them juiced up enough, they're going to stay happy enough to stay there, too. Okay. I don't see too much reason why the church can't legitimize this and say, no, it's all right. So we do have beer butts that we sponsor, in the sense, I don't have a beer budget, unless you think that church monies are being misappropriated. This is where I usually get the manager or the owner to have some share of responsibility. Say, you buy the beer and I'll provide the entertainment. We're going to combo it or something like that. A lot of it is by the links that you make and the initiative that these people take. But if you give them really something that they think is important, they get excited about it. And if they're convinced, boy, this is good, it really helped me. And I've got people that I know that would really like to be a part of this. They can go. Man, they can go on this. This has been real, real helpful. Just let it go and say, get this off the group and come on back in a couple of weeks. So before I came up, I had a call, it was a couple of days ago, from one fellow that I've been working with on an individual basis and then started working into one of our groups. Had a real fine experience out of it. And called me up because I said, Hal, why don't you pick up on some of your friends? He was in on the club entertainment community. He wasn't a part of them, but he knew a lot of people who were entertainers in the clubs and bars and stuff. Why don't you pick up a group, create your own, and let's give it a try and take off on it, see what we can do. Real great. He called me back, this was almost 2 weeks later. I said, hey, Bob, I got a group. Fine now. Really good. Happy to hear. Long time since I've seen you. Yeah, well, I've been working. Good. What kind of group you got? He said, well, that's the problem. I got 9 girls.
What you call a group?
Yeah, that's the group. So he has got a problem. I don't know exactly what we're going to do with that yet. But I don't think I'll go with that. I need to be good for that.
What about this the ratio with so many young men in Vietnam? And what I was reading here in America, looking probably saw it too on young adults. A lot of nurses, a lot of stewardesses, et cetera. It's like our wall police, 9-to-1 ratio. Is that true?
Yeah, it is pretty true. And I think there's other factors that apply here too. For one, the incidence of homosexuality in the apartments doesn't help this ratio any either. But there are, on the police records of Dallas, 25,000 known male homosexuals. And, I started with one of my gay friends Sunday. We had a meeting in the Circle of Friends, which is a gay group. And he said, man, if the police know of 25,000, God knows how many more there are. It's a sizable community in Dallas. And we are organizing them in a group called the Circle of Friends now. That's why it's a lesbian.
I was going to ask you, what's your attitude towards it? How do you swing with the homosexual community? Yeah. You know, there's all kinds of cans around about, you know,
yeah,
the disease, and, you know, I mean, what, you got any kind of posture?
Yeah, I guess it's point number one, acceptance. Mm-hmm. I really don't know what to do about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as an answer to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I know I cannot accept the directive of my mission board, which is, you may work with these people, or you may have homosexual groups at Interaction Center, if you have a gospel-oriented ministry which is directed to change. And I cannot accept that. So I've continued my work apart from the Interaction Center. I don't have any homosexual groups at Interaction. But I am on the board for the Circle of Friends, which means the Presbyterian place. Okay, if that's where it has to be, okay, I'll do it that way. But I don't really see the validity of insisting that we're going to force change as a result of the gospel. The gospel is the only thing that could possibly move it, and we have changed it. But in this area, I don't really see the value of really working on a homosexual to become heterosexual. Because I don't see too much of a difference, speaking from the viewpoint of Christian ethics, on whether he's screwing around with males or changing his ways of screwing around with women. I don't really consider that, you know, a real leaning toward Christianity. And I think it's far more complicated than the church has been willing to admit. We've been real quick about pulling out Romans 1 and saying, yeah. It's the condemnation of God, and okay, this is simply a symbol of their damnation. No. Uh-huh.
Is homosexuality a problem?
Yes.
If it is a problem, what kind of problem is it?
Yeah, I think it can be a real problem with individuals to the point where family, different family, church, community, society, and laws, that it becomes a real burden. And I think the result is the destruction of a lot of people because of this. I think, though, too, that there is a legitimacy in it that I have learned to accept, that there are some people. I feel real convinced of this in my own mind now, that there are people who can't possibly function any differently, whose only sexual expression is going to be homosexual. This is a factor in their life, but nothing is going to serve them hard. And they've gone their route. There's the one couple in our circle of friends that's been married for 13 years this year.
This the whole idea of young adults clustering apartments sort of bothers me, because it's like our campus here. You know, everyone's the same age. And when I was a student here, I remember it drove me wild to be with my peer group. And I enjoyed being out with their grandmas and kids. Last year, some students petitioned the faculty to be able to live where they want, single students. Married students would get an apartment with them, single man. And the faculty granted this request. It was because some men wanted to live in the inner city to find out life is like there. But as of now, there's no rule in the books that says you have to live on campus. So students can come here and live wherever he wants. Now, that tendency on the part of some students, I think, is a healthy one. They want to live like real people, whereas the campus situation is sort of unnatural. And this kind of thing perpetuates. It leads me to another question. Do married couples with children live in these apartments? Are they limited to young adults? Is there any mixing up of married couples with children in these apartments?
Yeah, the trend has been to concentrate on the young adult type of apartment, which does not have facilities for family living. In fact, the rule is, if you're pregnant, don't come. Because they will allow a child to be born while you're there in the apartment, up to 1 year of age.